Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Think off today. He'll be back tomorrow. Nick Ferguson from Nick and Cecil at night sitting in. Kind of sifting through your leftovers from the Broncos-Giants game. You know, after the game is over, you get those immediate big topics and sometimes some of the smaller issues that you want to talk about that are kind of in the back of your mind. You want to be able to still kind of express an opinion about. This is the opportunity to do it. Bronco Leftover Tuesday. Hit us up on the RamosLive.com text line 303-713-1043. For example, this text comes in, my leftovers. I'm still disgusted that Bradley Chubb is a Bronco, given that he's always hurt. If George Payton's unwillingness to trade Chubb is what kept us from getting Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, or Deshaun Watson early on, then that makes me cranky. Well, I don't think it was Rodgers or Watson, but Stafford? You think they wanted a Bradley Chubb and George Payton's unwillingness to include him put the kibosh on a deal?
That's a possibility. I don't know that for sure. But when you're trying to get a player like Matthew Stafford, teams are going to want something in return to help them build either one or the other side of the ball. So Bradley Chubb could have been one of those pieces that they asked for, and George Payton looking to build this team with a certain identity, like running the ball, playing great defense, I don't want to give up a quality edge rusher. And I know that may not sound great, Mike, to some of the Broncos fans, because just like the Texans said, hey, Bradley Chubb is hurt. But this is a physical game. Guys get injured, right? This is something that's going to happen.
Yeah, but there's a difference between guys getting injured and a guy just acquiring the label of being injury prone. And that's just what he is, and he never gets a chance to reach the potential of his career because he's just always hurt. And right now, that unfortunately is how it feels like it's going with Bradley Chubb.
Well, this
is a guy that's just always going to be banged up.
Well, sometimes that happens, and let's be realistic now. I mean, injury prone. You can't put players in bubble wrap. You don't know when these injuries are going to happen, but they happen. So you just have to deal with them. You're lucky if you are a player, and I don't care what sport you play, that you're able to get through a season or several back-to-back seasons without a multitude of injuries. You're lucky. I mean, for me, my injuries did not start to take place until the latter part of my career. But there were certain injuries that I actually played through, and I think that's the question that you should bring up. Can you play through certain injuries? Because every player is hurt. Every player is injured. But can you push through it? And what's your pain tolerance and your threshold?
Do you think he wanted to play last week?
Absolutely. He wanted to play.
This was the Broncos saying, hey, we got a 17-game schedule. Let's hold you out.
Of course. Because okay. Come on, Mike. If you are...
Well, no, don't say come on, Mike. I mean, need I remind you about Juwan James. We've seen players who don't necessarily want to play.
But see, there's a difference between players that are injured or hurt that want to play and those who are not mentally tough enough to push
through. And I assume that I never thought that Chubb was in that category. I think Chubb wants to play. I think this was a case where they said, nope, sorry, you're not gonna play. We're keeping you out. We know you want to play, but we're keeping you out. Yeah, I don't think Chubb's that kind of guy.
Well, let me bring up another guy, Jake Butt. Right?
Right.
I love Jake Butt when he was in college at Michigan. If he doesn't get hurt in that bowl game, his career is different.
Oh, he's probably a first-round pick.
Absolutely. Now, he's known as an injury-prone guy. His career was cut short due to injury. And once again, you don't know when these things are going to happen. And it's so easy to say, well, hey, he's a guy who's injury-prone. He can't get right. But can you push through certain things? And I know Bradley Chubb wanted to play. But the team is saying, look, this is a long season. This is a marathon. This is not a sprint. We don't want to put you out there, then we lose you, and then we don't have you in the back half of the season. That's not smart. So let's be a little gentle and patient as we look at today's athletes. Oh, here's a guy who's injury prone. Come on, let's be realistic about this.
By the way, as far as specifically the Stafford deal, the Broncos, by all accounts, never really made a hard push for Matthew Stafford. That reportedly it was them willing to send the 9th overall pick to the Lions in exchange for Stafford, but they also wanted Detroit's 2nd-round pick. Also some speculation that they were willing to include Drew Lock in it, but never any indication that Bradley Chubb was involved or the Lions wanted Bradley Chubb, and that was why it was a deal-breaker. Nothing like that. Stafford, by the way, looked pretty good the other day for the Rams. 303-713-1043 on the Ramoslaw.com text line. Coming up next, why don't you explain this front range justice thing that you told me about last night? I give you credit. You piqued my curiosity. Front range justice. Why don't you set up the tease here for everybody? Give us a little taste of what we're talking about here without giving it away.
Sometimes we see something and we think it's what it is, and our eyes are not lying to us, but sometimes they can. And I'm going to tell you exactly how your eyes lied to you on Sunday.
Well, hey, cue the Vance Joseph, you know? We didn't have good eyes.
We didn't have great eyes.
Right. Okay, we'll find out what that's all about coming up next. Nick Ferguson in for Mark Schlereth. All right, let's just jump right into this whole front range justice.
Yes, we are in Denver, Colorado, so yes, front range justice.
Yes, like the old Westerns.
Yeah, yeah.
Which led to clear leather.
Well, usually on the Nick Ferguson show, we always say, well, we tell the truth, but I was just thinking about you and Mark, and I was just like, well, you know, let me stay in accordance to the show.
I like it.
So let's call it front range justice.
All right, let's go.
Yes.
Roll it out.
So basically, you know, everyone was talking about on Twitter that PS2 Patrick Surtain was beaten on the play for the touchdown by Sterling Shepard. And the first thing that jumped out to me was just like, looks can be deceiving.
Okay.
But I'm going to let everyone just go out and blame him. And obviously, you can't talk about PS2 without talking about Justin Fields. So that came up on Twitter. Well, this is why George Payton made a mistake. We should have gone out and grabbed Justin Fields. So it was fun for me to watch. But let's break that play down for just a second. Right. And when we look at the play, I want to start the play before. When you look at what the Giants rolled out, it was 3rd and 5, and they came out in, I believe, an empty formation because the back motion outside of Sterling Shepard. And it started right there. Now, Josie Jewell needed to understand that when a running back motions outside the receiver and you are covering him and it's empty, the first thing the quarterback wants to throw is those inside breaking routes, and you have a wide receiver. You have to get inside to take that away. He didn't. So that started the next play, and the next play was a Shepard touchdown. And when we look at it, you had PS2 on Shepard, who was in what we call a minus split. That's inside the numbers. And anytime you identify that, you say, well, what kind of route can that guy run? Either he's trying to clear room to run an out route, or he's trying to clear space so he can run the over route. Okay, fine. So let's look at Alexander Johnson. He's not a bad player, but consider this to be a teaching moment because they had the back offset. It was shotgun, back offset left to Alexander Johnson. So they're setting the route up from the very beginning. What the running back does, he chips Jonathan Cooper on his way out. So it kind of holds Alexander Johnson, which he should have done before the play, is look across the field and say, well, if I am like the buzz player, a guy that should be about 10 to 12 yards deep, 1 yard inside the number to make sure that if you get a deep over, you force the bubble, it's a high throw, the quarterback's got to throw through your body. He didn't do that. He hung on the running back coming out of the backfield. Daniel Jones never looked at the running back. So that should have never held you to begin with. But the whole idea is that you have to play the defense that's called. If it's called for you to be on your landmark, you need to be on your landmark. He was not on his landmark. You had PS2 who was on outside leverage. he was running because he had everyone inside of him. If he knew, because he's a smart player, if I don't have inside, you know, help, I got to take away the inside, make him throw the outside route. That's not what it was. He had outside leverage. Knowing he had inside help, he was relying on both Josie Jewell, but more importantly, Alexander Johnson to be there. Alexander Johnson wasn't there. He took the bait. He fell for the banana in the tailpipe. All of those things. That is why that play happened. And here's what I would have loved to see PS2 do in that case. Save the down and make the tackle, right? I would have loved to see him do that, but he didn't do that. But that play wasn't on him, and there were so many individuals attacking him and saying, well, hey, this is the first-round draft choice. Is this what we're getting now? It wasn't his fault.
The coverage part of it, but he should have made the tackle.
Yes, you make that tackle.
So, any kind of blame thrown at Patrick Surtain and all the stuff that came out on social media, there was some basis for it. I mean, if you're going to be this special corner, this lockdown corner, you got to make tackles like that.
Oh, well, see, you said lockdown corner, and then you say make tackles. Two different things.
Well, okay, complete corner. Let me say that. If you're going to be a complete corner.
All right, yes.
That includes
making
the play on that.
Now, knowing as though
you can't have touchdowns scored on your watch like that.
No, you can't. But knowing as though being when you're in the chase position like that, those tackles are very tough. So to sit here and say, well, you make that tackle. I've been in that situation before, and you're not going to make that tackle all the time. You would like to see the player make the tackle, save the defense in that case, but you're not always going to do that. But this is why this isn't golf. This is a team game. Everyone has to do their job. But this is why we've seen so many games. You've seen just as many as I have. The last guy in the frame, we say, well, it's that guy's fault. But no, when you break it down, no. It wasn't his fault. He was just in the frame trying to make a play when there's another player that should have made the play. I'm going to take you back just a little.
I get it, but I'm looking at the play right now, and I'm watching Surtain's eyes, and he had a beat on Shepard the whole way, and it already started to move
towards him.
Towards him.
Yeah, but Shepard is running away from him across the field,
I know,
Mike.
But... okay.
I'll tell you this.
It looked like he had time to be able to...
to do what?
To be able to close quicker.
You say Bolt wouldn't have closed any quicker.
You say Bolt.
He wouldn't have closed any... The guy's running away from you, Mike.
Okay.
He's running across the field.
But, okay. The trail part, fine, I'll give you. But failing to miss the tackle, knowing you also had the sideline to help you as well, you got to make that tackle.
You would like to see. You would like to see him make that tackle.
No, you got to make that.
You know how difficult that is.
It's not. I'd like to see you make the tackle. You got to make the tackle. You're the ninth overall pick. You were a bit of a controversial pick because you're not a quarterback. You don't have the luxury of missing plays like that and being given the benefit of the doubt. I'll give you the benefit. You laid it out perfectly as to why he was caught trailing in coverage. And for people who are like, wow, he got burned on that. You explained that perfectly, and that wasn't his fault. But you got to make the tackle.
You would love for him to make the tackle.
No, you got to make the
tackle. But, Mike, when you're in chase mode like that and you're running that fast and you're not anticipating the guy to catch the ball and turn up the field.
He missed the tackle at the 20-yard line. Okay?
That's a difficult tackle.
Okay, it's a difficult tackle, but it's a tackle that I expect the ninth overall pick, who many people feel is a surefire, decade-long Pro Bowler in the making, I expect to make that tackle.
Mike.
And it would have been 20-yard line instead of a touchdown being scored.
That's a little ridiculous because we've seen a lot of, you know, big-time players, you know, miss tackles. I once saw Tom Brady juke Brian Urlacher, and it was like, what? He juked him in the open field. Like, that's not supposed to happen. Tom isn't that fast. So, once again, I'm not going to say that, hey, make that tackle. I would have liked for you to make that tackle, but that's a very difficult tackle to make when you are chasing a guy from behind and you don't have the proper angle.
But you understand, don't you? And I know he's not going to make every tackle in the course of his career, but in the early going, when everything's under that magnifying glass, And you got so many people out there as Bronco fans who are, you know, pining for Justin Fields. And every time Justin Fields does something good, they're going to be like, why don't we have him? It puts added pressure on Patrick Surtain to make an immediate impression and deliver immediately. And to miss a tackle like that, it's not a good first impression to make.
I can see that, but here's what I would say. I would, all those fans who are talking about, well, we could have had Justin Fields, I would love to put them in that same position and give them 10 tries and see how many times they make that tackle. See, I know because I've been there. I've been in that position before. It's easily said than done. So all you texters that are out there and have been saying that and people in the media, put yourself in that position. How many times would you have made that tackle?
Okay, but and I'm getting a lot of these on the text line. Oh, the media guy telling the guy who played the position what should have happened. Evans is the last guy on the fan to say someone needs to make a tackle. Only thing Evans tackles is the buffet line. Should he have made the tackle? That's a simple question. Should he have made the tackle?
No.
What? What?
No.
Wait a minute. Whoa. I will give you that even the greatest players missed tackles. And it's not a unforgivable sin to miss a tackle. You're telling me that's a tackle that should not have been made? No, that's why I completely disagree.
Not by a guy in that position.
I mean, I didn't play the game.
Not by a guy in that position.
That's a tackle that should be made.
No, that's why I said you would love for him, but being in that position before and understanding the angles, I mean, that's a difficult tackle to make. It's not straight on. A guy's running away from you.
Is it? Will he be graded with that being a missed tackle? How will he be graded? What's the grade going to be on that play?
Of course, as a coach,
he's going to be told you missed the tackle.
Right.
Well, then I rest my case. He's going to be graded down for missing a tackle.
But the coach is always also going to say, "Well, listen,
I know
it's a tough player to make. I know it's a tough play
coaches
to make."
Coaches are a media guy. Coaches are the coaches. They're the coaches. They know the game. They're coached to coach the game. And their ruling is going to be he missed the tackle. I'm right. You're wrong. Mister, I played the game. Great breakdown on why he can't be blamed for being beat on the play, on the coverage. But yeah, the tackle. He missed the tackle. You know it. I know it. Okay. Four down territory. Nick's like, why do I agree to these? Nick Ferguson, saying in for Sting. Four down territory next.
And he's
is four down territory.
Madden is on the field. He wants to know if it's real. They said yes. Get your big butt out of here.
We're on to Cincinnati.
I'm here so I won't get fined.
You want to lose? I throw, you catch. It's not that hard, okay? All right, get the out of here.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. First down.
Josie played good. You know, Josie plays good most of the time for us. And the thing that he does for us that doesn't show up in the stats is, you know, he's our communicator out there and really helps a lot of people get lined up, gives them tips, you know, just the extra stuff that make a big difference. But he played his position well, too.
Okay, I was going to ask you, Nick Ferguson in for Stank, who's off today. Performance of the Broncos defense, what part of it played at a level higher, better, more unexpected than what we had already thought of this defense going in?
I'm going to say the secondary, because
even better than what was expected.
The reason I say that, because even though this was the highest paid secondary in the league and everyone was anticipating how they were going to go out and perform, and this was the first time we actually saw them play a full game together, so I was presently impressed with what they were able to do, especially knowing as though there was no Bradley Chubb. Where was the extra pressure going to come from? So they held their arm in the back end, making things a lot easier for both Josie Jewell and Alexander Johnson.
Next in four down territory.
Second down.
The line opened it up pretty well. I mean, it's pretty easy run. They made it really easy for me. Doubled up to their guys. The tight end moved the guy out the way. You know, it was just real easy read. You know, cut it back and it was off to the races.
Off to the races for Melvin Gordon, who ended up having the better stat line. But when you look at the totality of the game and you realize that Javonte Williams had more carries, was given plenty of responsibility in there on third downs, was expected to go out and pick up blocks, did so, and when it came time to bleed the clock with about 4 minutes left in the game and the Broncos starting from their own six, he was out there for the first two carries. Has the elevation of Javonte Williams to basically co-starter with Melvin Gordon after just 1 week surprised you?
No, it didn't really surprise me. It just tells me how much confidence this coaching staff has in Javonte Williams, and also how watching him play in, you know, training camp, that's kind of given, you know, Melvin Gordon a boost of energy and confidence that he knows that he has to go out as a guy on expiring contract. He has to make sure that he's able to match every carry that he has. You know, when Javonte Williams goes in the game, you know what you're going to get. So Melvin Gordon, as he was talking about that 70-yard play, great vision, great balance. That's something that we've come to know of Melvin Gordon to be able to do, but we haven't seen it as of late. So having Javonte Williams is going to make this team great from a running standpoint, because it's going to make Melvin Gordon that much better.
You know, when Mark comes back tomorrow, he'll be able to expand more in his conversation with Pat Shurmur. But when I talked to Mark on Saturday, he was telling me about his conversation with Pat and how much he loves Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon as both being three down backs, which to me, fill in the blanks left unsaid, is the idea that Philip Lindsay was a major pain in the butt for Pat Shurmur. Not Philip Lindsay, okay? Let me stop that before people lose their minds. Just the idea that Lindsay was just good enough in the role, limited role, that he could execute, plus being a fan favorite, it made it really difficult because this is a guy that Pat Shurmur did not feel was a three-down player, and therefore felt that whenever Philip Lindsay was in the game, there was a certain tell for the defense as to what was coming or what wasn't coming. And that goes away now with Lindsay being somewhere else and Javonte Williams being here.
Yes, and I'm
fair
glad,
point.
Fair point, and I'm glad you phrased it in that particular way, because Pat Shurmur never felt as though Philip Lindsay was a three-down back. That's why if you look at the plays that were called for him, they were not great plays, and they were not thoroughly executed. Knowing as though you have a guy like Javonte Williams, now you feel a little different. Now it makes you think that you have Dalvin Cook, Latavius Murray, and now I can do certain things. But if Pat Shurmur wanted to look outside of himself, which he should have done, is now he could have utilized Philip Lindsay in certain ways, but he wasn't willing to unsee what he had already seen and just kind of change his mind.
Next in four down territory.
Third down. I thought he mishandled a ball or two, uncharacteristically. He had a penalty called back, a big catch and run. He's the best player I've ever coached, so I'm going to continue to look for him. And sorry about that, Vic, but, you know, he's a hell of a player. He deserves some good looks.
Ah, John Gruden, a little critical of Darren Waller, who did have kind of a strange game, had a couple drops. There was one time where all he had to do on a pass over the middle was just kind of reach behind with two hands and make an easy catch. Instead, he just tried to bring it in with one hand and ended up dropping it. But end of the day, the Raiders get the win. Exciting, if not sloppy, Monday night game. But, man, were you convinced there that the Raiders had just about set themselves up to lose the game in classic Raider fashion, only to have victory pulled from the jaws of defeat because Lamar Jackson coughed it up twice?
Yeah, I almost fell out of my chair because I was like, here are the Raiders doing Raiders-type things yet again. The ball deflects off of your receiver's hands and it's intercepted in the end zone when you are clearly in scoring position. I was like, yes, 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 Raiders are going to do it again. But then the football gods turned the tables on me. Lamar Jackson fumbles the ball and gives Derek Carr another opportunity to win. But I still say this, the Raiders are still the Raiders for me, because you still have a defense that can get after the quarterback, but the guys in the back end still can't cover.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. And my takeaway was Broncos should be a better team than the Raiders this year.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But the AFC West.
Absolutely.
All four teams 1-0. NFC West, all teams 1-0. Who's got the better division? I'll go with the NFC West.
I'll go with the NFC West as well.
Yeah. All right. Are we Fourth and long? Third and long? Third and long? Where is he? Where is he? Third long.
The king is here.
There you go, Marquette King. Whenever we're third and long on fourth down territory, we got to bring in Marquette King. We're just going to also mention the Ryan Fitzpatrick injury, out 6 to 8 weeks, and that's significant because that falls well within the window of the Broncos playing the WFT coming up on Halloween weekend. So I guess he could be back possibly by then. I guess that falls right at the end of the 6 to 8 week window for Ryan Fitzpatrick. We'll see. You don't think that Cam Newton gets a call from Ron Rivera?
No.
No. Okay.
Do you think so?
Boy, if he doesn't get a call in this situation, then where is Cam Newton going to go? And is this over for Cam Newton?
Now, when you say a call, are we talking about a call just to, hey, how are you doing? Would you like to play? Or a call to say, well, we need a quarterback.
We need you. Come in.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
You don't see that happening. Okay. That'll do it for Four Down Territory, our tour around the NFL. Bring that to you each and every morning at 7:30. Looking for your leftovers from the game on Sunday. Things that stood out to you that maybe didn't get talked about a whole lot yesterday. We'll do that next. Sifting through some of the leftovers from the game. Hey, I was very impressed by what I saw from the preseason mystery man, Noah Fant, who we didn't see any of, who, by the way, will be returning and making his debut with the Stokely and Zach show later.
Brandon today. Stokely and some other guy on there.
So looking forward to hearing Noah Fant on with those guys. But you as a defensive guy, talk to me about Noah Fant, Albert O., and how you would be worried as a defensive guy as the season goes along, how the Broncos might be able to employ the two of these guys.
Well,
or deploy the two of these guys.
Well, yeah, the thing that would trouble me is based on, you know, their size. And both of these guys are athletic, and we haven't really seen Albert O open it up from a speed standpoint like we saw when he was in Missouri. Because he still has the leg brace, and sometimes that kind of holds you back just a little. But knowing as though that at any point you can flex your tight ends out, you can put them on corners, you can match them up in the slot with linebackers, and you're saying right away before you snap the ball, Teddy Bridgewater, that's a win for me. Because whether it's an out route, seam route, it's a comeback route or a hook route, you know you're going to win that down. And what we've seen in the NFL over the past couple of years, the evolution of the tight end position, right? We call them tight ends, but for me, I look at them as being big wide receivers. And now you can create the matchups. And that's what every coach tries to do every single week, Mike, to look across the board and find out where we can exploit the defense, where we can find the best matchup to make us look great. And on that touchdown pass that Teddy Bridgewater threw under duress, Albert O did something that you typically don't see young guys do. Like, he was blocking a guy, then he was like, oh, well, there's an opportunity for me to free up. And he fell off, and he freed himself up, and he ended up making up for, you know, losing the fumble, which for me, I don't know how you feel about it. I don't think Logan Ryan actually recovered that in bounds. It seemed like his right knee was out of bounds.
It does, but that's the problem with what was the initial call on the field, and is there
way to overturn it.
Is there a way to turn it? Because it would have been one of those things that had it been called at the time he was out of bounds, I think that play would have stood up as being out of bounds. And the Broncos keep the ball. It's just, that's one of those, it's so important. What is the initial call on the field? Because then you need to have that, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Incontrovertible evidence that you can overturn it. It just wasn't there. So.
No, it wasn't there. But once again, watching the tight ends work. And we saw it kind of starting to come to fruition in training camp and preseason games. Eric Sauber was able to make some plays. And there were a couple of third and long situations where Teddy Bridgewater was able to find Noah Fant. And that's how you look at your tight ends as being those outlet guys. Mm-hmm. They're walking first down. Can you free yourself up? But also, when I give you the ball, can you outrun the defender?
It's why you have to have one of these guys, because just watching the evolution of the game offensively and how defenses are trying to match up, you guys on defense still have no answer for the mismatch creating tight end.
Oh,
you got no answer.
No, you
there's
really,
there's no
you really
answer.
Don't. You really don't, because in my playing days, I was playing against Tony Gonzalez, you know, and Antonio Gates. These were the guys that I was facing, and those guys were crafty former basketball players, and they were able to use their body position because they were bigger guys. So it made it hard for me to kind of reach around without creating a penalty to deflect the pass. And once again, we still see the big body tight ends, but we see guys who are quicker and faster. Like, to take you back, you know, years ago, you know, when the Giants had a tight end by the name of Mark Bavaro, right? Mark Shimura was with the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
These were big body guys who were not that fast.
Right.
Like, when I look at the guy, Shannon Sharp, who I played with, wasn't a big tight end, right? But he was just a big receiver playing tight end. He was really crafty. That's where we're getting back to from the tight end position.
Which is why I think the whole narrative that I hear year after year, oh, the Broncos can't cover the elite tight ends. Oh, who are we going to put on these tight ends? The Broncos, once again, clueless when it comes to stopping the top tight ends. Who can stop the top tight ends? Okay, we watched last night. And I always hear this. How are the Broncos going to match up with Darren Waller? Well, did you watch the game last night? Darren Waller was targeted 19 times. 19 times he was targeted. He had 10 catches for 105 yards and a touchdown on 19 targets. That's against the Baltimore Ravens. Historically, traditionally, one of the stingier defenses out there. They didn't have an answer for him. Face it, this isn't a Bronco-only issue. It's an NFL issue, which is why I'm so intrigued by not only Noah Fant, but Noah Fant and Albert O as to what they can do. Because now you're seeing, Nick, they're using these guys now. You can use them as a fullback. Line them up as a fullback if you want. And then put a lot of stress on a defense. There's all kinds of ways that you can utilize these guys. And the NFL is powerless right now to stop them. It's not just a Bronco problem. We got to stop. That's a lazy take.
No, it's not just a Broncos issue, but because we play against Darren Waller and Travis Kelce, it's about how many yards are you giving up? How are you able to defend those guys?
Well, you tell me who's stopping Travis Kelce, and then I'll say the Broncos should be held to that kind of standard.
Well, I mean, just to go back to the Super Bowl, we watched, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers use their two speedy linebackers to slow down Travis Kelce, to really take him out outside of the game. Do we have those types of linebackers? No, we don't. But we have PS2, Pat Surtain. And watching the game on Sunday, I saw him play corner. I saw him play the dime position. And on a couple of plays, they even had him matched up on Kyle Rudolph, which gave indicators to me, well, this is the way that the Broncos are going to look to play both Darren Waller and Travis Kelce, put PS2 on him and play coverage behind him. This is how you try to limit them. Now, I'm not going to say you're going to stop them and shut them down. That's being, you know, ridiculous.
Yeah, and this notion that Tampa shut down Travis Kelce in the Super Bowl, tell me how 15 targets, 10 catches, and 133 yards is stopping Travis Kelce. Now, they mitigated the impact of Travis Kelce in that he wasn't taking over the game and scoring touchdowns. But dude had 10 catches for 133 yards and 15 targets in the Super Bowl. They didn't exactly stop him.
No, okay? No, you're not going to stop him in that capacity because you have to look at the type of routes he's actually catching. He's not catching 20 yards, 30-yard explosive plays. It's a kind of combination of 5 yards here, 8 yards here, 10 yards here. And it's like, okay, well, we can live with that. The whole idea is we want to take away the explosive plays down the field and force Patrick Mahomes, or any quarterback for that matter, Mike, to be able to matriculate the ball down the field, which is very difficult. I don't care who the quarterback is.
Can I come back to that Pat Surtain play again that we were arguing about?
Go right ahead.
Because You laid out the case for why he should be excused for being caught trailing, what looked to be trailing in coverage on Sterling Shepard. I think the tackle should have been made, be that as it may. But explain this to me, okay? If Pat Surtain really wasn't, there was nothing wrong with it, why then in a game in which Justin Simmons, Ronald Darby, Kareem Jackson played all 61 defensive snaps. Kyle Fuller played 55. Bryce Callahan played 51. Okay, see where I'm going? All the guys in the secondary? Pat Surtain played 16. You don't
What
I'm getting at, I don't think I'm leaping at conclusions here, is that the coaching staff was not very happy with that play, and his playing time got severely limited after that.
Well, Mike, you're wrong in your assessment.
Tell me why.
Because you're looking at the number of snaps and saying, well, the coaching staff was dissatisfied with his ability. No, here's what happened. They decide, okay, well, our starting corners are Darby and Kyle Fuller. Right, we're going to roll out with them. And we saw the Giants get into what we call 12 personnel, you know, one back, two tight ends. And what the Broncos decided to do, they would take out either Alexander Johnson or Josie Jewell, and they would bring in a nickel, which was Bryce Callahan playing against that particular formation. We haven't seen them do that in a while. But there were other times when the Broncos did go nickel formation, and they brought in Patrick Surtain to put him at the corner position. He came in one time for Darby. Then he came in for Kyle Fuller. The idea was to give him enough game reps to kind of get him comfortable because, yes, he's a first rounder. He's very talented, but he is still a rookie. So the ability, the idea of getting him reps to get him acclimated because this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And then they put him in those positions to cover Kyle Rudolph. Also, they even blitzed him one time as well. So the idea is, we want to reward you, young fellow, for showing us that you can play in a nickel coverage. You can play in a dime package as well. And outside the numbers, we put a lot on your plate.
Yeah.
So let's give you some positive plays to build confidence.
All right. Again, good explanation. I guess after everything I heard and saw during the preseason, the rave reviews from the coaches, Vic Fangio, never asked more of a rookie than I'm asking of Pat Surtain right now during this camp. The veterans coming out and saying this guy's a sure thing. I guess I would have expected more than 16 snaps. That's all.
Well, you got it.
You think it'll go up
yes.
dramatically?
Well, define dramatically. Are we talking?
Well, basically
40
going
plays?
From like 16 to 30 snaps to 40 snaps to the point where hopefully he's taking somebody's spot in the lineup.
Oh, that could eventually happen.
Pat Surtain needs to be, in order to justify this pick, right? Pat Surtain needs to be starting over somebody by midseason, right? He needs to have knocked somebody else out of the lineup.
It's interesting that you phrase the question that way as far as, you know, to justify the pick.
Yes.
The ability the player has already justifies the pick. And he gives the Broncos an added defensive weapon. So if we were playing against Kansas City, I would dare to say that you would see PS2 on the field more than we saw in the game against the Giants because Kyle Rudolph, he's not that fast. Big, tall guy, but he's not that fast. If you're facing against Darren Waller is hurting you, and let's just say you start off the game putting Bryce Callahan on Waller and that's not working, then you go to PS2. So it all depends on the personnel that you're actually playing.
This is KKFN and KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.